This is Cave Scott Allen of Otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Okay, welcome to Herding Code. This is John. I am at DevSum Sweden. It is Thursday, May 23, 2019. I'm talking to Dylan Beatty.
Hello.
Hello. It's funny. I've been chasing you around Europe. We last saw each other in St. Petersburg.
That happens. No, we last saw each other in Belgium.
Belgium, that's
right. St. Petersburg was last week.
This is like a bad James Bond episode or something. My nephew says that I should have a show called The Boring Identity, and it's like The Boring Identity where he goes around the world, except I'm presenting at conferences instead. So, wow. So you've been up to quite a bit. So first of all,
yeah.
Tell me, how does this even work? How do you manage all this speaking at a bunch of conferences, doing 90? How many active talks do you even have going on these days?
The moment it's, I don't know, 8, 9? It's a combination. So, you know, I'm CTO at Skills Matter. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of the work that we do is conferences, community events, training, you know, as an organization, this idea that people learn better, or some people learn better by being in a room where they can actually talk to each other, not just kind of learning technology, but building relationships and stuff's really important. So they're very, very supportive of the stuff that I do with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not married, I don't have kids, and Fitbit says I sleep 5 hours a night. So,
gotta do something.
I enjoy what I do. And I also, I'm a pathological abuser of something called manufactured urgency. Which is
I
where,
know this well.
Yeah, you're like, I want to do this thing. And you're like, okay, well, if I just say I'm going to do it, I'm never going to do it. But if I say I'm going to give a talk on it, or I'm going to make a workshop, or I put myself on a deadline,
yeah,
then I have to do the hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a technique that has worked very well for me until this year, when it just kind of went a little bit too far.
Tell me about that.
Well, I had a lot of good ideas floating around towards the end of last year, things I want to talk about. And, you know, some of it is kind of serious talks about software development. Some of it is kind of, I don't like the expression soft skills. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's stuff about developer culture and collaboration and leadership and,
right,
you know, legacy code, all these kinds of issues, the environmental and sociological impact of modern technology. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I invented this joke programming language that
Rockstar,
yeah,
yeah,
which became a real programming language. I actually, you know, spent Christmas learning how to build interpreters and put that together.
Does it compile to WebAssembly yet?
So we already had that. Somebody actually did that by building an interpreter for it in Rust, and then running that through a Rust to WebAssembly converter. That happened quite early on, and it bothered me that I didn't know how it works.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will stand up on a stage and I will say, we must learn to study code, but you leave me at home by myself on a weekend, and I'm like, I don't understand this till I can build my own. so I re-implemented, first in JavaScript and then in .NET.
Wow.
To see how all that works. And actually, I did a talk in St. Petersburg last week where it's all like little 10, 15, 20 second Camtasia clips, which I talk through slide by slide by slide. So it's not live coding, but it is implementing a recursive descent parser on a stage in 40 minutes, which was first time I'd done it, a little bit too much. I need to tighten up the timing, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, so I had all these things on the radar, and you know, a lot of conferences just said, yes, we'd like that, we'd like that, we'd like that. And I think, you know, I've put together 5 or 6 completely new, you know, talks and ideas and topics and things for this part of this year. And there's been the occasional weekend where I'm like, I'm 40 years old, why do I have homework? You know?
Well, and your talks aren't just kind of like thrown together. Like, they're very choreographed. You spend a lot of time on your slides. There are animations. So,
well, you know, I always try and make the point. I'm like, okay, this is a live performance. Mm-hmm. You're in a room with a bunch of people. First, you have to hold their attention, you know, for 1 hour or 30 minutes or whatever the duration is.
Yeah.
And once you have their attention, you want to use that to entertain and educate. You know, I like comedy as a good way of getting people to pay attention and relax. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good application of humor and a lot of good speakers and stuff that they do. I was watching Scott Hanselman this afternoon, and you know, he had a room in stitches just talking about how you can get a giant purple mouse pointer in Windows 10, and no one knows that. He's good at that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, there's also sometimes
animation is just a great way of illustrating a point. Mm-hmm. Photography is something I like very much. I used to do bullet points, then I stopped doing bullet points completely, and it's like, well, what do I want people looking at? And, right. You know, it's a great opportunity to just share people and go, look at this photograph. You know, people don't really look at, like, scroll, scroll, scroll. Oh, look, cat picture, scroll, scroll, scroll. I'm like, no, I'm going to put this wonderfully, you know, shot photograph up there for 2 or 3 minutes, and you're all going to get a chance to really look at it, and I'm going to talk about ideas around this. And
yeah.
And it's funny, the way that I kind of put these things together has changed dramatically. I used to, like a lot of people, I'd start with slides. Mm-hmm. 60-minute talk, all right, 60 slides, right, that's it, right. Can I talk about each of these for a minute? Yeah, probably. And then I was like, this is actually completely backwards. What I want is 60 minutes of dialogue, or, you know, monologue, 60 right. minutes of talk. And so now I structure talks like I'm writing an essay. I'll move blocks around, I'll put things in and take it out, and I'll use the character count to judge
how long
it's going to take.
So you're writing a script, basically?
Yeah, it's kind of, the script is like a safety net.
Yeah.
It's like, if I run out of things to say, I can say that.
Yeah.
And most of the time, you know, it's a good way of organizing your thinking. It's so the word essay in English is mm-hmm. from essayer, which is a French word, which means to try. Literally, to write an essay is, can I sit down and make this thing make sense by writing it?
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, an interesting root of that word. And it's like, can I get a 60-minute talk out of this? And if I can write 60,000 characters, so about 8,000, 10,000 words, if I can write that on a flight off the top of my head, then I could have done that talk with no prep. Cool. All right. Often I can't. You get a little bit done. You'll be like, okay, and here's an idea. And I'll collect little pieces and ideas, mm-hmm. and then I'll sort of weave them into these things as we go.
So you've got a balance of a lot of things. You've got, like, the imagery, right, the mm-hmm. what you're seeing on the screen. You've got the humor part coming in. You've got the tech side of it that appeals, like, to, you know, technical people. And you also have, like, some themes and messages that you're actually trying to, like, inspire or motivate changes in behavior or that kind of thing. What are some kind of overall themes that are more interesting to you lately?
So, you know, something that I see, I've been coding since I was 8 years old. Uh-huh. I've been a professional, you know, web developer and then application and then systems developer for coming up on 20 years now.
Yep.
And what I increasingly see is a disparity between the problems that are, maybe a good way to solve it up is, there are problems that are important, there's problems that are interesting, and there's problems that are lucrative. Hmm. And back when very little software existed in the world, it was the important problems. It was interesting because no one had ever done it before, and it was lucrative because no one had ever done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that kind of the parity between those things is becoming less and less apparent. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are a lot of problems out there which are very lucrative. You go and work for investment banks and you say, I can build you a better algorithm for futures trading.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not making the world a better place. That's making rich people richer using technology. Right. And it pays very well. And for some people, that's interesting. And, you know, like the Rockstar project, to me, is fascinating. It's been so much fun.
Yeah.
But it's not going to make any difference. Right. And it sure as hell isn't going to make
any
money.
Not yet.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. If any sponsors want to sponsor
maybe some programming energy drink language. Or something. Yeah.
But then, and you know, there's the important problems. You mm-hmm. know, things like climate change, the impact that social media is having on democracy and media and mm-hmm. broadcasting and all these kinds of things. And, you know, I'm increasingly, the people who want to work on the important things are finding it hard to attract other people because the tech is not necessarily interesting. You know, it's a lot of legalities. It's things like, you know, look at aviation or medicine or the automotive industry,
yeah.
where they have very, very slow certification processes. And in software, we're not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. You know, in certain things it exists, but we're like, move fast and break things. You know, right-click, deploy, just push another one live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very interested in at least trying to make people aware that the potential is here with the technology we have to do amazing things that genuinely improve, you know, the world we live in and the societies we live in. But, you know, like any technology, there are upsides and downsides, and often, particularly free market capitalism, the downsides are the ones that make the rapid early adopters very, very influential and wealthy, and the legislation and the regulators are just, you know, really struggling to catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's all kinds of things. It's I was doing a bunch of research for a talk I did in Moscow in St. Petersburg last week, mm-hmm. about the minerals that go into manufacturing a smartphone.
Right.
And
right.
just, you know, they dig all this stuff out of the ground. There's sulfuric acid. There's toxic byproducts. There's radioactive byproducts. And this is just to get the neodymium for the magnet inside your phone speaker. And then, you know, you get an Android phone, you use it for 2 years and you stick it in a drawer. And you get another one.
You did the math showing how many are unaccounted for.
They're just, and there's like, you know, you pull these Gartner reports and Google, and there's like 4 billion Android phones that Gartner says somebody bought and Google says aren't online anymore. So they're either in landfill or they're just sitting around in our homes and offices and
stuff.
Right,
right.
And yeah, I worked out if you took all the lithium out of their batteries, it would weigh the same as the Eiffel Tower. And, you know, I'm like, they deserve better.
Yeah.
The amount of ingenuity, not to mention the human cost of building these things.
Yeah.
You know, why do we not have a phone that lasts 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's because everyone wants new, shiny, this, better screen, augmented reality. And, you know, we've had a hell of a ride from the iPhone 1 mm-hmm. to, you know, iPhone X and the modern Android smartphones and stuff. But we need to slow down. You know, these phones are good enough.
Well, if we look at it, I've had the same desktop computer for, I don't know, 5 or 10 mm. years. I don't even know when I last upgraded. You know, and I'll put new components in.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's not optimized for with phones, right? So, like, I remember there have been attempts to make, like, modular phones yeah. where you could upgrade them. But it's like, that'll be an eighth of an inch too thick, yeah. you know, or whatever.
But, I mean, you know, even the upgrading thing is like... The constant drive, you need a more powerful phone. It's like, we can send high-definition video around the planet
mm-hmm.
using battery power, and that's just normal now, you know.
Right.
Really, what are we going to do with more power? Like Candy Crush high-definition with Smell-O-Vision?
Yeah, you know, yeah. I've got an Android phone, and I'll see people on you know, Twitter say, those are unusable. The new iPhone has this much percent yeah. better, whatever, and it's like... I'm scrolling Twitter on this thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what really do I need?
Yeah.
Like,
and yeah. it's, you know, I mean, I remember the days when desktop computers really were painfully slow.
Mm-hmm.
And a new one would be, wow, this is actually genuinely better.
Right.
But, I mean, my laptop's a 2014 MacBook Pro mm-hmm. that's got Windows and Mac OS, dual boots, and it kind of does everything I need.
Right.
Like, for rendering some of the video I use in my talks, that's never going to be fast enough.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to right-click and bang, there it is, and I don't care. Run it in the cloud. Run it in the quantum realm. Run
right,
it wherever
right.
you want, you know.
Yeah.
But I accept that I'm doing stuff on a laptop that 20 years ago you needed a movie studio for.
Right, right.
And, you know, I try very hard not to take that for granted.
Yeah, you needed training. You needed hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment and all this. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, now kids are like, just used to doing stuff on their phone in an app,
yeah.
like not even a computer. But
and it's phenomenal. You know,
yeah.
I think it's you know, I love technology. I love software development and I love gadgets and I love what's possible to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do become increasingly aware that this is all coming, you know, there are costs and there are risks here. And
it's hard to think of, like, there are motives that change things, right? Mm-hmm. So one is profit motive. And
yeah.
it's obviously like selling more phones is making more money. There's also, like, appealing to people's, you know, good nature, or at least explaining the costs, that there are costs more than just
yeah.
the money out of pocket to buy something. And that's what you're doing here in this. It's hard to think of what else there is in this to tweak people to, you know, other than, like, hey, you could pay this and it'll make you happy for 10 minutes, you know,
yeah.
when your phone is that much faster and you install that new app.
Yeah.
But it's not going to yeah. change your life, and it will harm, you know, in other
and
ways.
And it's also, you know, you look at, I remember reading somewhere recently that the, you look at YouTube, I think was the example they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But they're talking, you know, YouTube's perfect user is somebody who logs onto YouTube for the first time and they never go outside ever again. That's,
yeah, yeah,
that
right.
is the extreme. If you took all of their algorithms and all of their content curation mechanisms
yeah.
and their recommendations and all this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and you say, well, if this stuff was perfect, what would the outcome be?
Yeah.
You know, imagine they achieved 100% effectiveness. It'd be like, yeah, somebody sits down one afternoon, they're like, oh, look, it's a kitten falling in the laundry basket. And they click that, and it's like, you might like this, you might like this, you might like this.
Pretty
and,
soon,
you know, 36 hours later,
yeah.
they're a frothing Nazi who won't go outside because of the CIA tapping the, you know,
exactly.
or whatever it takes.
Right.
But that's, you know, YouTube is never going to say, you watched enough video for today.
Right.
Go for a walk. Come on. No more YouTube for you today, son.
Yeah.
They don't do that.
Yeah.
They want you watching more video. Yeah. And it's compulsive. And it's,
well, and so then it's hard to, like, you can appeal to good nature or you can try and legislate.
Hmm.
And like you said, legislators are at this point, like, I remember when Troy Hunt was testifying to Congress and just the things, whenever you see people, you know, in government trying to understand technology, they're not 5 years behind, they're 20 years behind usually. It's pretty difficult to see how that gets fixed.
There's understanding technology and there's understanding the capabilities of technology.
Right.
We are quite capable of legislating things like automobiles and handguns.
Right, or cookies.
Or Kinder eggs. You're not allowed those in the U.S.
Thanks
you try to take
that,
them across
buddy.
The border, you'll get busted. I have no doubt that the legislators behind that did not have a detailed knowledge of the entire manufacturing and refinement process for the cocoa butter and stuff.
You're right,
they use.
Yeah.
But it is difficult. You know, technology makes... In Scott Hanselman's keynote this morning, he was talking about buying wireless insulin pumps on Craigslist because they changed the law and made remote control illegal. So to be able to control an insulin pump from his smartphone, he needs to find ones that have like a certain old version of the firmware that still accepts radio signals.
Wow.
That was just this kind of real, you have the whole Mac OS or Windows update, like, ooh, upgrade is available. Imagine if you did that and it meant you could no longer, your insulin pump stopped working,
right.
And it is, I get up some mornings, I look at my phone, I'm like, where the hell, where did Slack go? And I'm like, oh, they've redesigned the icon.
Right.
And they've changed it in the night. And my little lizard brain is looking for the blue and green thing, and it's not blue and green anymore.
Right.
And I can't find it.
Yeah.
It is this constant reminder that this thing that you paid all this money for, this phone in your hand, it's not yours. They completely control it.
Yeah.
And if you're, live in the wrong country and upset the wrong people, you wake up in the morning, and it's like, oh, no, your phone's been shut down. We don't like what you did. We disapprove.
Yeah.
And, the fact that that's possible from a purely technological perspective is interesting.
Okay, so as a, somebody working in software development, I'm aware now, what can I do better? How can I change my behavior to make the world a better place with this in mind?
I think that the two things that I'd encourage everyone to do, one is any opportunity you have to just explain to people like that one level of abstraction deeper. Someone says, what smartphone should I get? You can be like, well, actually, one, do you really need a new one? Like, is there something we can do? Maybe we can get another year out of the one you're already using, that kind of thing. Repaving Windows has been something I've been doing for 10 years. It's the old miracle trick. Ah, this laptop's too old. I'm like, give it to me for the weekend. We'll back up your stuff. We'll just refresh it and take all the crap off there. And then they're like, okay, this is pretty nice.
This reminds me of some people say, I'm going to get a new electric car or whatever to help the environment. And some people have said, honestly, if you buy a used car with pretty good gas mileage, it'll be better for the environment because you're not creating all this, like you talked about, the electronic waste and the battery and all that.
Legislation is starting to catch up on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And certainly in the UK where I'm from, and I think across Europe now, you can't just throw electronics in the trash. Mm. They have to be responsibly recycled, which I think is a really big step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, they don't realize that. They didn't stop to think about it.
So I cut you off. There was the first thing you were saying was just encourage that, learn things and think about things at one level deeper.
The other thing that I think, and this is not cool or sexy, and it's not the kind of thing you come to conferences to hear, is most of the software problems that exist now, if your customers have got a smartphone with a 4G or a Wi-Fi connection, you really don't need all of this latest and greatest, this framework, that framework, that framework.
Mm-hmm.
HTML, actually, basic HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript, you can build some really quite good user experience, and it's lightweight. People don't think of bandwidth as costing anything, and then you look at what it costs to run another cable to Australia.
Right.
And you're like, we're using that for banner adverts and Candy Crush, really?
Tracking JS.
I'm dumping on Candy Crush a lot. It's just the one that keeps springing to mind because I see it in my feeds a lot. There's this temptation, and the recruitment industry is very much like, oh, you got to learn this or you won't find a job. You got to learn this or you won't find a job. You got to keep up. We need React developers and Angular developers. And I'm like, you know, we could build really good stuff with HTML and CSS.
Right. And it's actually accessible, yeah. And it's, you know, it's not
good. I moved house last year, and I was just kind of as an experiment, I was trying to set up all of the utilities at my new place just using my phone. And, you know, sometimes it's like the electricity company, you download an app and it's really slick. And they even had this thing. This is one of the most brilliant pieces of user experience I've seen. There's a button in the app that switches on the flashlight. Because it knows that you're in the closet under your stairs looking for the electricity meter to read the numbers.
That's really thoughtful.
And it's like, you're like, okay, that's, I've never seen anyone incorporate like the physical feature of a phone into an app that way before.
That's brilliant.
And then, you know, the other extreme, local government, I still don't have a recycling bin at my house. And the form you use to request it is, you know, kind of, it's some plug and play framework for building forms for something that, I don't know, and of course you load it up, and then the banner cookies, the cookie banner thing, covers the bottom half of your screen,
right?
And the GDPR thing covers the top half of the screen, and then the live chat gets dumped in on the middle. And I use I carry two phones with me, but the one I mainly use is this one, which is iPhone SE, which is tiny. It's the same footprint as the iPhone 5, and I love it. It's a wonderful piece of industrial design. And it's so many, and I'm like, you could have done this with HTML 3.2.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you need to know, where do I live? What's my address? When did I move in? What's my email? Right. Bang. Tick, 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 tick. And, you know, I don't see enough kind of, maybe it's time for brutalist web design.
Yeah.
Like, you know, forget Rococo and Baroque and everything. We're building the web equivalent of concrete.
Yeah.
It's a big blocks of concrete. Does the job. It's not pretty. We don't care.
Yeah.
It's scalable and it works.
It sure does. I mean, yeah, you're right.
So, but yeah, you know, devs are out there, and I think it. You need a. I fully appreciate that you need a certain amount of confidence in, you know, your own standing in your team or your company, and a certain amount of first-hand awareness of these things before you can be that person who says, I don't think we need all this fancy tech.
Sometimes you have to understand it to say you don't need it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were mentioning the thing about, you know, feeling that you need to get on the latest technologies to be marketable and to advance your career. And that kind of, I think, segues into your talk today, where you were talking about, like, how do I advance my career? Do I need to move into management? What is my kind of... So how do you think about that, like, as you're a senior developer? Do I need to become a manager to move forward?
So that's, I mean, the whole kind of idea of this talk comes from this idea of a senior developer. You know, what is seniority? Because we don't have, with possibly a couple of guys in America working in healthcare, and I think they are probably male guys at this point. Yeah. I don't think we have anyone in this industry who's been writing the same code on the same systems for 30, 40, 50 years.
Right.
You know, you get that in other industries. You know, metalwork, manufacturing, there's process changes, but there's still, you know, if you do a piece of artisan construction and you get a craftsperson to come in and build you some wooden cabinet doors, they're probably using techniques that haven't changed in a century.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that in our industry. So, yeah, we have this idea of seniority, but you're not going to find anybody out there now who has 25 years experience with .NET Core.
Right.
Because it's not a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of unpicking this idea of what seniority means. And, you know, there's four strands that I tease out in this, which are management, leadership, expertise, and mentorship, mentoring. And how, you know, these are important roles for high-functioning teams, but also there's often this kind of contrast between them.
Okay.
You know, like management, to me, as distinct from these other three, is, you know, it's very much about kind of curating, tempering, looking for the right word, the relationship between the employees and the company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, make sure everyone gets, you know, good managers are great. They can make it like you don't worry about salary, you don't worry about benefits and stuff. You can just get on and do good work.
Take care of the details so I can...
Yeah. But then, you know, you go to that great manager, you're like, I have a problem with a database query. And they're like, I haven't touched a line of code since the Clinton administration, you know. Sorry. And at that point, you're like, well, who else have we got here? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that's our leader. That's our product owner. That's the visionary. And you go to them and they're like, what? I don't know. I'm leveraging proactive synergies and enhancing shareholder value. And so, you know, there's then this other seniority, which is the expert, which, you know, may, depending on the people, this may be somebody who is not naturally suited to leadership or management. But you go to them, they're like, yeah, I see the problem. Bang, right-click this, add an index on this column. You're like, can you do that one more time slowly?
Right.
And then, you know, mentoring is the kind of person who, you know, they're maybe not actually your boss. They may not even be a sort of senior person or even the same organization. But this is somebody who's kind of a little further down their journey than you are on yours.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I sort of see an opportunity here. I can, you know, I see potential in this person or this something I can help with here. And, you know, it's just kind of investigating those. And there's some stuff in it about, you know, Linus Torvalds and the whole, you know, controversy with his, the Linux kernel mailing list posts that he's made over the years.
Right.
And then at the end of last year where he's like, okay, I understand, I get it. I'm really sorry if I put people off. And you know, one of the messages I play on heavily in this talk is that he didn't turn around to the people who had confronted him with this problem and say, will you tell me how to solve it? He actually stepped away. He said, you know, I get it. I appreciate what you've told me. I'm going to go and get help from people who know how to help me do this better.
Okay.
And this, I think, is a, you know, it's human nature when somebody kind of makes you aware of your own flaws to get upset and get a bit reactionary, but also to be like, well, tell me how to fix this, because I don't want to go to bed tonight feeling like a jerk.
Right.
You know, how would you fix it? What should I have done?
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of the time, the person...
You told me the problem, so you need to know the solution too, right?
And, you know, this comes from education. You go to the teacher with your homework. The teacher says, this is wrong. You're like, all right, what's the answer?
Right.
You know, you get quite a long way through your education before you go to the teacher, and the teacher says, well, this is wrong, but I don't know. You know, go and do another year of doctorate research or something.
But we
do, you know, we I think grow up with this idea that the person who tells you you're wrong should also be able to tell you how to be right.
Hmm.
And a lot of the time, you know, somebody's just like, that made me really uncomfortable. And it takes guts for them to say that.
Yeah.
And it takes courage to speak up. And for you to turn around and go, well, one, it's your fault because there wasn't a problem until you came along. You know. And two, well, what should I have done? It's just the wrong thing. You know, take it away. And I think, you know, Linus did a really, really kind of... Not just I admired the way he did that, and it took a long time, but also he's a very public figure who was very, very transparent and open about how he was proposing to handle this. So I thought that was very kind of interesting, because open source gives you all the stuff about seniority, but it's divorced from money. The whole idea of getting promotion so you get bigger salary just doesn't happen there.
Yeah.
And so it gives us a very different set of case studies around what it is to lead a team, to lead a community,
okay.
these kinds of ideas.
Yeah.
So, and that was, you know, very interesting to put together, and some really interesting angles in there. So,
how do I apply that? Like in my, you know, as I'm thinking about my day-to-day work, do I progress into more than one of these? Do I do what feels more natural to me? How do I know what?
So, you know, there's a couple of, I guess, takeaways that I got in that. You know, one of them is if you focus on one of these, you're probably going to find you get weaker on the others, and you need to know that's going to happen. Like, I see a lot of people...
Like the manager that doesn't code anymore.
Yeah, like the manager doesn't code. You know, when you first start out, it's like you're a hands-on coder, and now you have, like, a, you know, junior or somebody working with you, or a you know, apprentice, an intern. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then one day you're like, I haven't actually opened Visual Studio in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And this we used to joke about it being the new laptop latency cycle. Like, how long someone gets a new laptop, and how long is it before they realize that it doesn't have Visual Studio installed? Because developers would be like, Monday morning, bang, okay, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
And eventually you get someone like 3 months on and they're like, I haven't actually, I'm a manager now.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my Jira tickets and my email and my spreadsheets and this is my world.
Right.
And, you know, we need people who are good at that.
Yeah.
And we need people who not kind of just good at that, but have the combination of the attention to detail and the humility that makes that part of a functioning team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leadership is, you are going to get pulled up on, I got brilliant ideas and I want to do this. And people are going to go, you can't do that. That's actually impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, leadership kind of attention to detail actually can just slow you down. You can get fixated on the little picture. And, you know, expertise, one of the things that I see happening, so there's this phrase, I see individual contributor, which is not really a thing in the UK very much, but I see people in the States talking about a lot.
Definitely.
Which is this idea you can actually, you know, you can have a long career and get well paid and rewarded for it for being good at developing code and solving problems, and you don't have to make the move into management or something as part of your career progression.
Yeah.
And, you know, the final point I make is about mentoring and how... a lot of people are like, oh, I'd love to help, but I don't have time. Mm-hmm. And I tell a story of Sue Black, who approached Wendy Hall, who was a professor at Southampton, where I was actually an undergraduate, and said, will you be my mentor? And Dame Wendy Hall, OBE, says, I'd love to help, but I don't have time.
Yeah.
And Sue Black says, can you spare me 1 hour a year?
Wow.
Like, if you can find, I think it's 1 hour a year or 1 hour a month or something.
Yeah.
But it was like this really, really, like, that's, I promise that's all I'll ask for.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that, then the onus is on the mentor. Okay, I can, this is a commitment I can cope with. And
wow.
For the mentee is very much like, all right, I got 1 hour, make it count.
Yeah.
And you know, so many people at a place like, you know, DevSum where we are right now,
mm-hmm.
it's like they may have like a 10, 20 minute conversation with somebody that could change the course of their career.
Yeah,
could
you're right.
To
you're
a
right.
new collaboration, a new yeah. job, just solve a problem that's been bugging them forever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a kind of mentoring. And, you know, it's often people think, oh, I don't want to be a mentor. That sounds like a lot of work. Yeah. And actually, it can just be the right conversation at the right time, and it can still have a sort of profound effect on somebody else. So.
Wow. Okay. That's probably a good place to wrap up. I think
all
we
right.
could talk
this
for a lot
delightful.
Longer. But yeah, this is fun. So I don't know where I don't know where we'll meet again, Mr. Bond, but I'll be watching for you. So.
Well, I'm in Minsk in 8 days, 10 days. Then I'm in NDC, so NDC Oslo, and then KCDC. And then August and September. August's nothing. September's a couple of events in London. And then October, it all goes crazy again.
One last thing, then, while you're talking about that, all that. How if somebody is like, hey, I would like to get into this conference speaking thing and
yeah.
all that, what is your advice to that?
Find a room full of people, stand up and tell them something. I mean, I got into this by Goiko Adzik asked me if I wanted to do a lightning talk. That was just... you know, it's a combination of things. One is just stand up in front of a room full of people and tell them something.
Yeah.
Something a lot of speakers, like, they struggle with is watch your own video, listen to your own voice. Because
yeah.
that's going to be weird for, like, 30 hours.
Yeah.
It just is. And it's only once you've got past the weirdness that you can actually watch it critically and go, I say too much.
Right.
I need to stop fiddling with my fingers when I talk. And you can start, you know, really... looking critically at those kinds of things. But hey, you know, you're on stage in front of a room full of people. You have a microphone and they don't. So what's the worst that can happen? Do it. Try it out. Do a you know, lunch session at your company. Go to a user group. Find somebody, room full of people, stand up and tell them a story, pick something. And, you know, when you think like, all right, this is good, start spreading the word. Submit to some conferences, see what you get.
All right.
It can be a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot
Thank
for
you
your time.
Bye.